Hello and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast, which is a parenting podcast with a difference. Now, I've got a special episode for you this week. Well, it's certainly very special to me anyway, because of my guest, who is Nicola Enoch, who is the founder and CEO of Down Syndrome UK, Positive About Down Syndrome. So this is an organisation that before I had my Leo, I'd never heard of before, and now have a very vested interest in. I think the work that they're doing, the information that they share, the support that they give is absolutely incredible, as is all of the local organisations as well, doing incredible work as part of the Down Syndrome community. Where I am in Liverpool, that's Down Syndrome Liverpool, so a shout out to them as well. And the reason that I wanted to speak to Nicola on this particular episode is because this Saturday, well, if you're listening in real time, this Saturday coming up is World Down Syndrome Day. So the 21st of March every year is World Down Syndrome Day. And I thought, what better time to get Nicola on the podcast to talk about her journey as a mum, what it is that led her to setting up Down Syndrome UK, and just, you know, the incredible work that she's gone on to do with it. In this chat, Nicola is incredibly honest, which I really appreciated. She talks about some really dark thoughts that she had after her son Tom was born 21 years ago. And I think sometimes people are scared to be as honest as Nicola is, because you think, oh God, I can't tell people that I thought those things, or, you know, this is what was going through my head. So I actually think it's incredibly refreshing to hear somebody talk like this. And as I've said many times, I think it only brings us all closer together. You know, whether your child has Down syndrome or whether your child has a different diagnosis, the feelings and the thoughts that Nicola had when Tom was born will resonate with a lot of people. I'm absolutely sure of that. We talk about how times have changed since Tom was born, and also how there's still quite a long way to go in terms of awareness and breaking down those stereotypes around Down syndrome and other diagnoses, and how important the right support is in those early days of receiving a diagnosis. I found Nicola's story quite inspiring as a woman who has become CEO of an amazing organisation, really making a difference to people. And also as a mom of a child with additional needs, I found it really helpful to hear such a positive story from a mum of a young adult, because her son Tom is 21. So for me personally, it was great to hear Nicola's story and how she describes her life with Tom at the end of this episode is absolutely heartwarming. We do discuss some difficult topics in this episode, specifically around termination. So if you think that that might be difficult for you to listen to, maybe come back to this episode on a later date. But that's enough from me. Let's get into it. Nicola, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure, Gemma. Delighted to be here.
Now, people in the Down syndrome community will know who you are. And if they don't know who you are personally, they will certainly know the fabulous organisation that you have set up, because you are the founder and CEO of Down Syndrome UK.
That's right. Yes. Didn't expect to be, but yeah, here I am.
Well, yeah, I want to get onto that, because this is, for me, well, it is a special episode, but for me personally, it's an extra special episode, because this episode will be going out the week leading up to World Down Syndrome Day, which is on the 21st of March, which 4 years ago, I'll be honest, meant absolutely nothing to me. I couldn't have even told you there was a World Down Syndrome Day. I certainly couldn't have told you when it was or why it was so important. And isn't it funny how your life can completely change?
It's remarkable. Absolutely. I mean, yes, my life's gone from depths of despair to being, you know, a sort of very strong advocate. So you're right. Yes, it's amazing the journey I think we as parents go on.
You are mum to Emily and Tom. That's and right. Tom has Down syndrome. How old is Tom now?
He's 21.
How old's Emily? Is she older?
Yeah, she's 25. So yeah, okay. She was 3 and a half when Tom was born. So yeah, they're adults, flown the nest, you know, very different life to what I expected it all to be perhaps. But yes, Tom's 21 and living his best life.
I would really like to talk about Down Syndrome UK and World Down Syndrome Day and all of that. That's kind of the reason for this episode. But before we get on to all that, just briefly, would you kind of tell everyone a bit of your story from when you found out that Tom has Down syndrome?
Briefly, as I say, so I had Emily, who's 3 and a half, second pregnancy, well, actually fifth pregnancy, because I'd had several miscarriages. But
I'm sorry,
thank you. Yes, expecting Tom, didn't know at the time, a little boy, but I was nervous of having a baby with Down syndrome. I was 39 and it was made very clear to me that my risk was high, as the language was used by the healthcare professionals. My obstetrician wrote my screening result in red on the top of my file and every time sort of queried it. And at the 20-week fetal anomaly scan, the sonographer had said that she was concerned baby looked like they had talipes, club foot. And her words were, that could be indicative of a chromosomal abnormality such as Down syndrome. And I think like most expectant or new parents, when they hear those words, they're filled with fear. And if I'm honest, for me, dread. It was something, you know, a condition I knew nothing about, but just the general narrative and sort of societal attitudes led me to believe that that was something to be avoided. So I had gone home and obviously did what everyone shouldn't do, jumped on Google. And I thought, personally, I can deal with a baby having a condition such as talipes. I thought perhaps there's corrective surgery, physiotherapy that can sort of help. But the condition Down syndrome, I thought, and the stigma that I felt was associated with it, I didn't want. But the truth is, because I'd had miscarriages prior to Emily, because of my age, I knew I wouldn't try a pregnancy again. I should have said that after the screening anomaly scan, the screening midwife had immediately booked me in for a CVS the following week. I don't remember her asking me. It was just a sort of automatic process. But I do remember her saying, don't worry, you know, we can sort it out. And so the implication very much and the expectation was around termination. And so I'd spent a weekend Googling and really thinking about what to do. And to cut a long story short, decided, I phoned up on the Monday morning and I cancelled that amnio. And to this day, I still say it's possibly the best decision I've ever made in my life, because the fact is, you know, I think my husband and I would certainly have considered termination. So that's my sort of backstory. So, you know, when Tom arrived a few weeks later, for 24 hours, I was absolutely euphoric. I now had a little girl and Tom, her little brother. And then it was 24 hours almost to the minute that a paediatrician sort of came onto the ward and very awkwardly and clumsily expressed concern. She asked me whether I thought my baby looked normal, which I thought was just an awful thing to ask a new parent to make judgment on their child. Still upsets me, no matter how many times I've recounted this. But yeah, that was it. My world fell apart, absolutely devastated. And, you know, this was admittedly 21 years ago, so I didn't have access, you know, to the internet as we do nowadays. But I was given information from the 1970s, you know. So the fact was, it was outdated at its time. And the support was just dire. I had a section, so I had to stay in for a few nights. And in those days, I had 6 words of positivity. And that was from one midwife who said to me, you have a beautiful baby boy. The rest of the time, it was all the things he wouldn't be able to do. He was a medical exhibit. He was a mid-August birthday, so all the junior doctors were on their new rounds. And they'd all sort of be queuing up to spot the markers. And I basically just... the absolute bond and unconditional love I'd felt that for that baby was severed. And if I'm honest, I did. I emotionally rejected him. And I left the hospital on the Friday without Tom, whilst we came home to decide whether or not we could cope or to have him adopted. And again, another weekend of soul searching and speaking to people, and another eventful Monday morning, because obviously, you know, we went back and we brought him home, and not for one minute have I ever regretted that decision. So that's where I came from, a real negative experience that absolutely, you know, I really, you know, use the word devastation. That's how I felt. And I guess it was particularly compounded by the fact that, in a way, because I could have done something about avoiding being in that situation, that almost made it worse, you know, from the screening and so on. But anyway, there I was with this baby who I was struggling to connect with, to, you know, emotionally bond with again. And yet there was Emily, you know, at 3.5 celebrating being a big sister. And but it was a difficult, very difficult time. And it certainly shaped me. And all that I've sort of gone on to do has been influenced by my experience. And then that of, you know, other parents I've encountered over the years. So, yeah, that's where I've come from.
Nicola, thank you so much for being so honest there. I always really appreciate it. I feel like I have that level of honesty as well, but not everyone's able to voice those feelings and those thoughts that they had at the time. And I think that only helps other parents in a similar situation. So I just want to say, it's made me really emotional listening to you.
It's something, it's taken me quite a while to actually be able to voice the things. You know, again, I think sort of, I had so little support at the time that it was, you know, I just had to deal with it all on my own. I think nowadays, I hope that by creating sort of communities as we've done through Positive About Down Syndrome Pads, that gives people those sort of those spaces in which to be able to be honest and know that we're completely non-judgmental. You know, we've been there, we've done it, we understand. And you know, I gave a TED talk 4 or 5 years ago now, and I really had to think, do I want my story out there in the public? You know, I didn't want, I could feel ashamed, I could feel embarrassed by it, but actually I don't. I know that I was ignorant, really, really genuinely ignorant. I don't think I'm a bad person. I think I was, I just didn't understand the situation I was in, and I think I was badly let down. So that's a lot of what motivates me. And, you know, and I think, I hope nowadays that expectant new parents, you know, like yourself, do feel able to vocalize your feelings and not feel guilt in any way, because, you know, it's not us as individuals, we're just society's, you know, impact on our feelings and sort of lack of support and so on. But yeah, I think times are changing, and I think it's really important to be honest and to acknowledge our feelings. And I think it's okay to be able nowadays to be able, you know, you can love your child whilst also perhaps wishing things weren't as they are. And I think people find that difficult. I think they sort of feel obliged. Oh, I love them unconditionally as everything is. And actually it's okay to say, yeah, I wouldn't be without Tom, not in a million years. But would I change him if I could? Possibly. You know, I'd want him to have us, you know, he does have a very fulfilling life. But of course, any of us, you know, if we can make lives easier for our children, then we'd always choose to do that. So,
yeah, 100%. And I think two things can be true at the same time. And that's something that I learn in therapy that I found extremely useful, because I think, and I won't be alone in this, I think when you come through the other side of that grief, that's how I would describe the initial feeling of getting Leo's diagnosis, because you're grieving the baby that you thought you were going to have, the life that you thought you were going to have. I was able to kind of put my finger on that feeling really early on, myself and my husband. And I'm quite grateful that I was, because I was like, okay, this is a grieving process. We're just going to have to go through it, and then we'll come out the other side. But I think when you do come out of the other side of that grieving process and you're like, okay, my life isn't ruined. This is going to take us on a different journey, and it's a journey that's going to open up beautiful things and make us much better people than we would have been otherwise. I mean, I like to think I was a good person beforehand, but like you said, that level of ignorance, and it's a word I use about myself all the time because I was ignorant. If I'm being completely honest, I was ignorant to the entire Send community because I just didn't know any different and I hadn't had any personal experience of it. But I think that when you do get to that point of, okay, this is an amazing life that we're going to have, or, you know, the words that you would use to describe it, there's then those feelings of guilt that you're like, oh my God, I had all these horrible thoughts about my own baby. Yes. I'm a terrible mother. How could I possibly have felt like this? So it's complicated, isn't it?
It's so complicated. It's messy, really, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. I mean, I can remember, oh my gosh, I think, you know, lying in the hospital and thinking, I'll never, ever love Tom as much as I love Emily, you know, and that was just awful as a new mum. All I'd ever wanted in life really was to be a mum. And there I was having those thoughts. And I actually, you know, one that Tom, when he was only 2 days old, was in Skaboo. And I can remember lying in the hospital thinking it would be easier if he died. You know, I actually thought it was all about me. I feel terribly selfish for saying it, but, you know, I can only control my own emotions and feelings. But, you know, I think we're put in a very difficult situation at times. And I think, you know, you and I, we've now come out the other side and we're very much about celebrating and enjoying, you know, once that sort of ignorance starts to be replaced by knowledge and reassurance, you know, and for me, the sort of love started to sort of flow back. Yes, you know, as I'm sure, you know, you obviously discuss regularly. Of course, there are challenges and so on in bringing up a child with special educational needs. But from my experience, the positives far outweigh the negatives and so on. So, yes, what a journey.
When did you get to the point where you were thinking, I need to set up something here? And did it come from a place of you looking for support and not being able to find it?
Yeah, it started off, first of all, through going, I just went to local playgroups with Emily anyway, and was taking Tom along. And I found it awkward at times that, you know, everyone's talking about milestones and, you know, how well little Johnny's doing and, you know, how brilliant they are at speaking Japanese or whatever. and I did find that difficult because, you know, I was still struggling. I didn't, you know, it wasn't just a light switch that one day I'd rejected Tom and another day I'd accepted him and everything was fine. It took me quite a long time. And if I'm honest, you know, there's still instances, moments when there are challenges. But back when he was, you know, little, I just wanted to be able to take him somewhere where I felt he was the norm, for the sake of a word, you know, in healthcare profession. We always say you don't choose normality, you use typically developing. But in this instance, that's what I wanted, was for Tom to go somewhere where he was, you know, meeting with others with Down syndrome. And there wasn't a local group just for little ones. There was a local group, but, you know, I went along with Tom and as a babe in arms, and there were sort of teenagers there, and that just didn't feel appropriate. You know, I wouldn't have done that with Emily.
It's quite confronting, I think, that, isn't it? We had a similar experience, and I went to something far too early that I shouldn't have gone to in hindsight, and it certainly set me back a little bit.
Definitely. Yeah. And I've always been very mindful of that, you know, in pads with our closed groups, I keep them within stages, well, ages. So there's a little bit further ahead, but not so far enough that you're going, bloody hell, I've got to think about that. Or, you know, you just need the next few months or a couple of years or whatever. So, so I set up in January 2006, the Ups and Downs up here in Warwickshire, where I'm based. And with two other mums, I just invited them along and we met on a fortnightly basis, and that's continued. There's now about 60 families still going in Warwickshire, and we work with from babies through to, well, the oldest of Tom and his contemporaries, really, sort of young adults. So I really wanted somewhere to go where there were other parents going through the same, to connect with local families, which was invaluable. And also it was important to me that Emily grew up knowing other families with a brother or sister with Down syndrome. So that's what motivated me. And then I also started to discover about early intervention, and I sort of read up and found out about Down syndrome education. So I used to drive down to Portsmouth, South Sea, once a month, 123 miles each way it was. And I'd take the information and activities I was learning there and bring them back to Warwickshire and share them with the other mums. So I've been a great believer. I guess once I sort of realised that Tom had ability to sort of develop almost, I was so ignorant, I really wanted to give him every opportunity. And so I sort of did some research, and that's how I got, as I say, went down to Down Z and started to try and help him. And I guess part of that was doing it alongside other people. And so the ups and downs, yes, would meet then. I think we grew pretty quickly, extended to weekly sessions, and just devolved from there. But I remember for many years saying, I'm just keeping it to South Warwickshire. And that's what I did for a long time. So
Wonder, Nicola, if you found anything similar to me. So when Leo was born, I joined a WhatsApp group, which was from Down Syndrome Liverpool. And I was absolutely shocked. So it was, again, same as you, and it was an age-appropriate group. I think it was preschool age, the group that I was in. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely shocked at how many new parents were joining this group all the time, because I certainly thought, this is only us. I mean, not properly, oh, we're the only people with a child with Down syndrome. But I would have thought that the Down syndrome community, although I wouldn't have used those words at the time probably, but the Down syndrome community in Liverpool would be very, very small. And I remember seeing these new people going, hi, I'm new to the group, this is my baby. And I was like, oh my God, that, like, and it's just something that I'd never been aware of before. Did you find the same thing?
A little, perhaps. The summer Tom was born, there were four babies born, or five, was it? I can't remember now. May, June, July, August, four. So, which was just obviously by chance, really, because the hospital's nowhere near as big as Liverpool, you know, Warwick. And I was connected with those families quite quickly. So that was immediately my sort of experience. And I always say, you don't know what you don't know. And I had no idea how many babies there are with Down syndrome. I didn't know, you know, what size the community was. I found myself, I was then on high alert wherever I went. I was looking out, you know, for another child with Down syndrome, you know, and you'd kind of go, oh, look, there's one, you know, terrible language and all that, but hey, you kind of, and you'd be judging them slightly and sort of saying, oh, look, you know, I'd take comfort, you know, going, oh, I mean, honestly, oh goodness, I was so ignorant. But, you know, oh, look, she's walking, because I really just had no knowledge. And so I would say, yeah, perhaps I think once I set up pads, that's when I realised the size of it, as I sort of got more involved on a national level. They say between 1 in 800 to 1,000 babies a year are born.
And that's in the UK. So actually, if you think about that, it's actually quite a lot of babies, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot out there. But I guess, you know, once you're in the community, you discover just how, you know, I feel like I know so many, you know, it's fabulous. So many people now with a member with Down syndrome. It's a fabulous community to join, I have to say, I think, because we're all so supportive and kind. Someone sort of wrote in one of our groups the other day, we every week welcome all our new families into the new parents group, and someone wrote, you won't find a kinder community. And I thought, I hadn't thought of that before. But yeah, we are kind.
Did you ever expect it to become as big as it did?
From what I'm doing, no.
Yeah.
No, as I say, I was, you know, running the ups and downs alongside my own business, you know, obviously all on a voluntary basis. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do anything more than this. There's no need. But it was basically there was, I realized I was only ever meeting locally new parents. It sort of slowly dawned on me, I never met an expectant parent. And I didn't really know the statistics around termination. And I didn't, you know, you just live in your own little bubble quite a bit. So I was just sort of chugging along in life. And I was realizing every year or so I'd meet a new family and I'd go and visit them. And, you know, the mum was devastated. And I started to think, why is this carrying on? You know, this is ridiculous. You know, technology is moving on, information's out there. Why is it not reaching our expectant new parents? Why are they still struggling so badly? Say, you know, by then Tom was 12, 14 years of age. And I was actually put in touch over the years, a couple of times, in fairness, by then with a couple of expectant parents. And I'd been speaking with one couple who'd conceived through IVF and were expecting a little boy. And then one day I just received a text from the mum-to-be saying that they terminated. And she said to me, she said that they, the doctor had said that the baby would suffer. And I was upset, but I was really angry for those parents, you know, having spoken to them and the journey they'd been on to, you know, become pregnant. And they, I just thought, how dare that doctor tell them that their baby would suffer? He wouldn't know. And that just, I just thought, blow it, I'm being polite. I'll do something about it. And so I just wanted to get stories and photos out there because I thought that's what I'd craved. When Tom was born, I was, you know, what's our future going to look like? I kind of, you know, when Emily had been born, I thought, I know what her future will look like. It will look like mine. God help me. But, you know, when with Tom, I thought, I have no idea what his future would look like. And so I set up the website. And that's what PADS started off as, literally just a website. I just reached out to families I'd met through social media and said, will you, you know, I know your story. Will you share yours? And I tried to obviously get a sort of cross range of people with different experiences from different ages and ethnic backgrounds and so on, and just shared the stories. And then I thought, oh, well, that's all well and good. So created a website, and the guys locally who developed it for me, we launched it, and I think I just advertised it there on whatever groups I could find on Facebook. And I seem to remember now, within a week, we'd had 100,000 hits, and the website guy said, that's good. And I was like, really? I've no idea. I had no experience. They were going, I think you've got something here. And I thought, well, that's all well and good, but what am I going to do with it now? I've launched this website, but how do people find it? So I managed to, I had 100,000 postcards printed and I don't know, 10,000 posters, and from my kitchen table, pretty much sent them all out to maternity units across the UK, mostly through local support groups. And then of course that meant parents were then reaching the information. And I'd just put my own phone number on there, same number I've had for however many years. It's still out there in the public. And people would then be connecting. And, of course, I realised they need more than just those photos and stories, which I hope were at least bring some sort of reassurance. And so I started by setting up just, first of all, a new parents closed Facebook group. So literally, I think it was about the 3rd of January, how many years ago, 6 years ago, 7, 8 years, I lose track of time, set up a group, and the rest, as they say, is history. It's just grown and grown. But my sort of priority was to try and reach those expectant new parents. I'd also sort of realised, I discovered how high the termination rates were, and I thought if we as a community don't do something about it, we're not going to have many, you know, babies left. Also, NIPTY was being introduced, and there was worry about, you know, higher rates of termination. So, yeah, so that's kind of what motivated me, was that one couple's experience.
I mean, you telling that story is heartbreaking. I would like to say I am very pro-choice. As a woman, absolutely. I think yeah. You should absolutely have the right to choose what happens with your body.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of Down syndrome or any other, you know, prenatal testing, I think it's very hard, I would imagine, because I had a postnatal diagnosis of Down syndrome, which I will forever be grateful for because I got my beautiful home birth, which I never would have been able to have. You would never, ever be able to relax for the rest of your pregnancy, whether, you know, there's a high chance of Down syndrome or something else, whatever it is, they're saying something's going to be different with your baby. I can't imagine what that would feel like. But my issue is the laws around termination with Down syndrome. And I know it isn't just Down syndrome. It is a few other conditions as well. But I find it baffling that the law is still that you can terminate a baby with Down syndrome until they're in the birth canal. And I think as an expectant parent, how can you ever go into that birth with a positive outlook when you're being told by the medical profession, essentially, this is bad? That law is backing up and exacerbating the fact that this is a bad thing. Therefore, at any point, at 41 weeks pregnant, you can choose to terminate this pregnancy. And it horrifies me every time I think about that.
It just sets the narrative. You 100%. Know, I think, you know, I do a lot of training and stuff, you know, and we as a charity do with healthcare professionals, you know, and it just makes it acceptable to be discriminatory, really. Yeah. And I think for our expectant parents, they go, oh, blimey, it must be bad if they allow that.
You know? Exactly.
And that's what we see. You know, we're supporting 80 plus expectant women at any one time through our Great Expectations group. And I feel for those women and their partners. You know, some of them are, they're the ones who reach us and hopefully, you know, again, sort of have some comfort and support through us. But for those women who don't, I mean, we've done a lot of research around this with Warwick University and independently ourselves before, you know, and the experiences of women is just utterly disgraceful. And that's another motivator for me, is it's unacceptable the way expectant and new parents are treated. We see expectant women expecting twins being told, keep that one, get rid of that one. I mean, it's utterly, utterly, you know, in the UK today that this is the attitude we have and that it's allowed. I mean, we as a charity sort of try and support parents to put in complaints and so on, but it's really tough for a new parent. You've got enough on your plate. You're a new parent, never mind a parent of a little one with a little extra. And women often, I think, worry, you know, what if I want to have another baby, you know, how will they treat me? Because I'll be going back to the same hospital. And you've just got so much on that you really don't have the mental capacity to consider a complaint. But we will try and do that, you know, support families or at least go into the hospital and deliver training. But yes, that whole thing of the sort of late term termination, completely in agreement with you. It's a woman's choice to terminate, but I believe, you know, both of my children should have been protected, equality in the womb. So it's something, as you know, our community's campaigned hard for, and, you know, a local woman with Down syndrome, one of our patrons, Heidi, has put so much into it, but it's been knocked back time again.
But it's been knocked back recently, which, again, horrifying, because it's not even one of these laws where you go, oh God, that's outdated. I'm sure if it went to government now, it would change. Well, it has gone to government and it hasn't changed.
That's right. Yeah, I know.
Which I just think is absolutely disgusting. But anyway, before I get on more on my high horse on that one, we'll move on.
I'm with you.
When we got Leo's diagnosis, PADS was one of the resources that we were given. I have to say, I've said this before many times on this podcast, I feel incredibly grateful that we had as positive an experience in getting Leo's diagnosis as we could have done, and in every experience since. And I know that that isn't everybody's experience, so I'm very mindful of that when I say that. But I always think, and actually, I I was talking about this on a recent episode. I think it was an episode that Francesca was on, talking about her little girl who has Down syndrome. And I suddenly realized I was editing the podcast and I thought, do you know what? I talk all the time about how lucky we were and how our consultant who delivered the news, and she's still Leo's consultant now, so she's been with us through our entire journey, I always talk about how kind she was and how empathetic. And I thought, you know what? I've never actually told her. So I emailed her the other day, or I emailed her secretary and said, would you mind just passing this on? Because I thought people are so quick to say when something's not right. And you don't always remember to say thank you so much when something was so lovely. So I emailed the other day and just said, I've probably never said this to you, but I talk about you all the time and how lovely you were. So I just wanted to say it to you. But we were given some resources, obviously the advice, don't Google, which I didn't. And she said, here's some resources where you can find up-to-date information, you know, where you can actually find things that will help you. And I just think you should feel so proud, Nicola, that, you know, new parents with a diagnosis are being pointed to something that you've set up and it's really making a difference.
Thank you. Yes, I am. It does make me proud, but it also makes me comforted. And, you know, it's lovely to know that perhaps other women don't go through the shit that I went through. You know, it's still a period of adjustment, no matter, you know, you can look at all the lovely, colourful photos and read the stories, but, you know, it might just make it slightly easier, is what I hope. So, yes, I mean, you know, we're a very powerful community. And I think when we all sort of come together and support each other, it's fantastic. So, you know, PADS is able to provide that platform, but it's very much a, you know, a community success, really.
You know, we've been speaking about, you know, people's experiences of getting that diagnosis. And obviously yours was not right. Do you feel like your first year with Tom would have been different if you'd have had a different level of support when he was born in the hospital?
Yes, I do. I mean, I know I'd have still struggled because I know how ignorant I was. Mm-hmm. But I know if I'd been given just more positivity, you know, which is why I called it positive about Down syndrome, because, as I say, there was so much shit about Down syndrome out there. It was sad. You know, the hospital were just grim. You know, I remember one midwife sitting on my bed and telling me about her cousin's son or whoever it was, I can't remember, and what an awful life they led and all this. And I thought, bugger off, leave me alone, you know. And for the fact she sat on my bed as well, I found that so invasive to then tell me about her negative experience. I think if I'd had more access to the lived experience, which is what we try to provide, but also the support. I think for me, connecting with other parents made a huge difference because, as you said, I think it's, you feel so alone at the beginning. Yeah. You know, I was, but I was the only person I knew with a baby with Down syndrome. And therefore you feel very exposed. And again, that's something that I think through the PADS community, you know, one of the first messages when I, if a parent, you know, when I reach out to parents is I'll congratulate them and then let them know that they're not alone and that we're here for them. So I think that would have helped me enormously, having a more professional, you know, yes, I connected with a couple of other parents, which, yes, was really, really invaluable. And to this day, they're, you know, two of my best friends. But I really needed more than that. And I needed the professionals to step up. I remember as I left, the paediatrician who'd spoken so awkwardly, you know, around Tom, she said, I've learned so much from you. And I thought, why are you learning from me? This is your job. You know, you should, this is a ridiculous situation. So I do think, you know, there's more midwives and paediatricians and so on need to be better educated. And I think that's improving. I think, you know, I think there's so much now on social media that whether they choose to sort of study almost and access our training or not is one issue. But even just by reading, seeing people's stories, by seeing, you know, the fabulous advocates who are out there, Ellie on Strictly Come Dancing and George on CBeebies, yeah, whether you want to be educated or not, you subliminally are being so. And that can only impact, you know, and improve attitudes, obviously, and expectations. Because I think that's a big challenge in an issue in our community. I think for me, I had such low expectations, but I quite quickly realised that unless I created opportunities for Tom, and I needed to raise the expectations, because no one else was going to. So again, the sort of professionals perhaps didn't have the knowledge, you know, in education.
From my own experience and speaking to other women, you know, on this podcast and other women that I've connected with personally who are mothers of children with Down syndrome, I do think that that expectation has changed. I think, depending on who you speak to or maybe where you are in the country, I think delivery and language has still got quite a long way to go, especially language. But I do think that that expectation has definitely moved along, you know, since you had Tom, certainly. I think.
Oh, enormously. You
know,
yeah.
And that's brilliant. And you're right, you know, the visibility and the inclusion of, you know, you used Ellie and George as brilliant examples, you know, and I think Ellie's on the one of the BBC's flagship shows. That's incredible. And I think George is fabulous. My Leo isn't watching, it's CBeebies, isn't it?
Yes, George, that's right.
So Leo doesn't watch CBeebies yet because he's, oh my God, obsessed with Bluey. I'd be desperate for him to watch something else.
Okay.
But I think for children without any kind of disability, that's so important for
Absolutely.
Them to see people like George. Yes, of course, it's important for our little ones to see other children, or what, well, George isn't a child, sorry, to see other people with Down syndrome. You know, that is incredibly important. I love that Mattel released the Barbie with Down syndrome. She's in a box for Leo when he's old enough to be able to play with her and he won't poke his eyes out with her sharp feet. But I think the inclusion for me is it being not that kind of thing of people going, oh my God, look, isn't that great, or isn't that different? It's it's just, you know, everybody is just part of life. And I think our the next generation growing up and not perceiving that as something different is so important.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I can remember it was probably 10 years ago when a lad, Seb, was included in the M&S Christmas advert. And that was huge. We were all, it was the first time, you know, a major retailer had used a model with Down syndrome. And, you know, and since then, nowadays, you know, I feel like I've slightly let Tom down because he isn't signed up to one of the modelling agencies, you know, because I'm delighted to see how many little ones do feature now, as they quite rightly should. And it will just become unworthy of news almost, because it's just the standard, isn't it?
Yes.
So, and that takes time. You know, I kind of realize we're evolving all the time in society, and our community is going through, you know, a big change. Obviously, as you say, in the 21 years Tom's been about, the opportunities are greater, the expectations are higher. Obviously, you know, with another hat I wear, I was involved with getting the Down Syndrome Act. Went through Parliament, and whilst it's not perfect, that will create, you know, again, it's sort of, it's just getting the knowledge and the information out there that people with Down syndrome haven't almost been worthy of for many years. They've sort of been denied and segregated and dismissed. And now people with Down syndrome are quite rightly having greater opportunities in life. And yeah, it's fantastic. It's an exciting time.
I mean, there is still a long way to go. I would say that, as you well know, Nicola. There's an episode, I actually recorded it a while ago now, but there's an episode coming up relatively soon. I've recorded with Christian, who is one of the founders of Stand Up Socks.
Yep.
So Christian has a brother, Ross, who has Down syndrome. And the episode, although we are talking about Down syndrome, that episode is much more about opportunities in the workplace. The reason I wanted him to come on was because I wanted to speak to somebody who grew up with a sibling with additional needs. And, you know, as a grown up now, how he perceived his childhood. And I know everybody's experiences will be different, but we talk about that in that episode that's going to be out soon. But we do talk quite a lot about equality in the workplace and how much further there is still to go. And I learned quite a lot from that episode. So I think, you know, watch out for that one because it is brilliant. I've got here, Nicola, I literally came across these the other day, and I've got here my books that I got sent from PADS when Leo was born, and one of them is called The Little Book, Little Orange Book of Knowledge, and it kind of talks you through the appointments that you'll have, the specialities that will be under, and all, and kind of what to expect from a medical point of view. And it talks about physio and audiology and all of those things. But the one that actually got me was this book called Nobody Told Me. It says The Truth About Down Syndrome. And you mentioned initially on the website having the stories and the photos, and this book is a physical version of that. And do you know, I probably shouldn't say this to you, Nicola, but I think I probably sent off for this pack too early. I think I did that thing, and I won't be alone in this.
No.
When people will have got a diagnosis and gone, right, I need to join all the groups, I need to go to the things, I need all the information, and I did that. And this is the bit I shouldn't say to you. I don't think I've ever read this book properly because when I got it, I opened it and there is some beautiful stories in here. There's gorgeous photos of really happy families just living normal lives, which is exactly what you need to see in those early days. But I think I was still, and everyone will have been at this point, or maybe not everyone, but a lot of people will have been at this point. I was still, when I opened this book at this point, of going, you're all liars.
Yes. Completely. When people say, you know, you won't want to change a thing about him, I'm thinking, of course, I don't know. I fully follow that mindset. But no, I didn't believe people either. And I fully realise that everything we do, you know, you can never be all things to all people. And I kind of, you know, as a resource, it's something that we send out to people. And if it's useful, it is. And if it isn't, it isn't.
But I think, though, that if I'd have read this maybe 2 months after I did, I probably was reading this when Leo was about 4 weeks old, when I was in the depths of despair going, my God, my life is ruined. Everything's. Yes. And I genuinely, genuinely believed that. I was like, our life is now terrible because of this. And it won't be nice. And I remember looking at these pictures thinking, but that's not going to be my life, because how is this happening to me? And I think, actually, I wish that I had refound this much earlier, because this is such a beautiful book. And weirdly, I was reading through Your Welcome just before we jumped on this call.
Okay.
And Your Welcome at this part of this book made me cry, but for completely the opposite reason that I was crying when I first got the book, because I just thought, the words that you've used are so beautiful, and what a beautiful book to gift to people.
Thank you.
And I just think it's fabulous. And like I said, I wish that I'd have read that maybe even a few weeks after I did. And I would highly recommend that if you are listening to this and you have just got a diagnosis of Down syndrome, you know, and these are free. You send these out to new parents for free.
It's available online. You can read it online as well.
I would say get it and just make sure you remember that you've got it available to you, and read it at the time where you feel it will help, because it will help. And the stories are amazing in this book. And I think it's such a lovely resource in a world of outdated information on Google or medical leaflets telling you that your baby might not be able to hear properly or might not walk or won't be able to see properly, all of those things. And it's really important to see information like what's in that book. So thank you from me and from all the people that will have helped as well. So I'd like to talk about Well Down Syndrome Day.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, World Down Syndrome Day is on the 21st of March every year. The reason being that Down syndrome is an extra copy, so a third copy of the 21st chromosome. So the 21st of the third month is World Down Syndrome Day. There's a different theme every year, Nicola, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah, Down Syndrome International determine that. Each year they just try and sort of have a slight focus. But I guess for us as a community, or for us as a charity, it's about just generally raising awareness. It's a fantastic opportunity to make a lot of noise, and social media sort of just becomes full of people, you know, wearing their funky, colourful socks and just, you know, shouting about their children, young people, family members with the condition, and hopefully, you know, how proud they are of them.
So I know that lots of people are going to be doing sponsored things. Like you said, lots of people are wearing the socks. Some people wear odd socks. Some people wear colourful socks. Some people don't engage in the socks, and it's fine, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, some people won't engage in an outward way with this at all, because I do know that some people find World Down Syndrome Day slightly triggering, I guess. And I suppose I am early in my journey. Leo's only 3.5. But I think certainly the first year, Leo was born in October, which is Down Syndrome Awareness Month, which I didn't know at the time. So he was born on the 2nd of October. So there was quite a lot of information going around on social media that month anyway. And then by the time it got to World Down Syndrome Day in the following March, I was in a much better place than when Leo was born. And I since I got to an all right place in my head, I've been extremely passionate about shouting about Down syndrome on my social media. I haven't made my social media entirely about that. It's about my life, and my life includes Down syndrome. But I do try and raise awareness. I try and be honest, you know, about the challenges, but also saying, you know, we have this lovely life with my three children, and one of them happens to have Down syndrome. But I do remember at the end of that first day, I think I'd put some posts up, and I was really keen to reply to people, you know, who were sending nice messages and engaging. And I remember at the end of the day, I literally threw my phone on the floor, and I was like, I never want to speak about Down syndrome ever again. It's too much. And I think that's probably, you know, and not just with Down syndrome, but all kinds of disabilities and additional needs. Sometimes it does become a little overwhelming, despite you wanting to shout about it in a positive way, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. I mean, I've literally written a post this morning in our new parents group, you know, saying to them, most of you are going to be a long way off registering this, never mind celebrating it and getting involved, you know, and that's absolutely fine, you know. I don't think I celebrated World Down Syndrome Day, oh my gosh, possibly until DSUK was up and running. It wasn't really on my radar, despite running a local group. Locally, we kind of did a couple of little things. We all had a meal out one year, but it wasn't anything major. So I would, to be honest, you know, it's really since setting up DSUK that we've sort of gone full throttle on it, because for us as a charity, to be brutally honest, it's a potential big fundraiser for us. About 20% of our annual income, hopefully, will come through from World Down Syndrome Day. So it's a big, you know, we're kind of quite reliant on it, to be honest. But it is a fantastic opportunity for those who are ready and those who want to, to just, you know, we have social media posts that people can just share. So
I love
21
those.
Facts about Down syndrome are in October. How many days are there? 31 facts. I have to scratch my head and think of extras or whatever. But yeah, it is just a nice opportunity for people to perhaps just share those feeds, those posts, and people just, again, it's that, it might be slightly in your face, but I think perhaps it's just sort of a nice way of people learning about a condition that otherwise you don't know anything about. And then obviously we do a lot around people celebrating their own children. So, and people do appreciate that opportunity. I mean, you know, we're mums, we're proud of our kids, we want to talk about them. And this is a way to have an even bigger platform perhaps to do that.
Yeah, so. And it's also a lovely opportunity as well, I think, days like this, that it provides the reminder and the opportunity to help break down some of those stereotypes, because they are still very much there. Before I had Leo, had a very narrow-minded view of Down syndrome, what that physically looked like, what that would mean for somebody. And it's all wrong. Everything I thought was wrong. And I would, like I said to you earlier, I would consider myself to be a nice person before I had Leo. I'm quite an intelligent person. And I still had these very outdated, ignorant views of Down syndrome and disabilities and all of that, just because I didn't know any better. So I am very keen to help change other people's perceptions as well, because of the perceptions that I had.
Well, you're doing what I did. You know, I just happened to do it in a different format. You're doing it through the podcasts and, you know, through your social media. Because it is something that we know how ignorant we were, and we want other people to realise, you know, the reality and the fantastic lives we lead. Well, not fantastic, that sounds over the top, doesn't it? You know, but perhaps the everydayness of our lives. That it's
well, the
not...
normality, isn't it? The normality of our lives.
Yes. Well, all the, like you know, you said you thought everything was just going to be negative and doom and gloom and, you know, bleak. And actually, you know, what I find is our life is very colourful and, you know, none of those things, you know, what a waste of bloody time, all those worries I had and all that time of being miserable, when life's very much not, that's not the our reality.
People can find, as you said, really great bite-sized, I guess, information about Down syndrome on your social media channels, but especially, like you said, especially around World Down Syndrome Day, and you do it in October as well. But I always think that those posts are so helpful, and I've shared many of them since Leo was born, because it's an easy way to just help to educate other people.
It really is, yeah. And this year we've expanded and done some extra resources around sort of in the workplace. So we recently had a team member join us, Claire, who, you know, her daughter's 5 or 6 now, and sort of 3 or 4 years ago, she wanted to do something at work and she wasn't quite sure. And she did do something and she's really pleased she did. And she sort of did, I think it was 21 facts about Down syndrome that she shared sort of through her company, intranet or whatever. And I just thought, oh, fabulous. Right. I mean, that's all I do in life, Gemma, is take other people's ideas and recycle them. So we've got that for people, you know, who want to perhaps be able to just share something in to their work colleagues as well. So we try and provide resources for schools, for nurseries, for workplaces, for social media, so that really there's no stone unturned. There's something for everyone.
Was the sunflowers or the flowers your idea? I think it was, wasn't it? So this was something a few years ago when my daughter, she's in year 8 now, but when my daughter was in primary school, it must have been the year after Leo was born. I think it was for World Down Syndrome Day.
It was, yeah.
And
so Chloe,
The class, Millie's class, which led by her teacher, which I was really appreciative of, because I'd messaged them and I think I must have sent them the link on your website and said, listen, I'd really appreciate it. I understand that you're busy. If you haven't got time, that's fine. But I think this would be a really nice thing to do with the kids. And they planted sunflowers and then they watched the flowers grow. And it was this gorgeous way of showing the kids in an age-appropriate way that you plant something that looks the same. So the seed and then watching the flowers grow. And they all looked different. They all grew in a different way to different heights and the flowers bloomed differently. And they're all beautiful. And I thought, what a gorgeous way of opening up that conversation with younger children.
It is. It's a lovely sort of analogy, isn't it? Yeah, it was Chloe who was working for us. Suggested it, and it too has sort of grown each year that more and more nurseries and schools sort of sign up to it. You know, for anyone, well, this might be a bit tight for time because World Down Syndrome Day is very soon, but we also provide lesson plans and PowerPoints for assembly and so on, so that there is that opportunity for schools to be able to educate, whether they've, you know, whether it's an older siblings at a school or there is a child there with Down syndrome at school. It's a nice way for schools to also get involved.
And can people find all of those resources on your website?
All of it's on the Down Syndrome UK website.
Now, Nicola, I finish the podcast in the same way with the same two questions every week. And the first one is, what is the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
I really struggled with this.
Sorry.
Honestly, I mean, I'm a very opinionated woman. I give out advice left, right and centre. Perhaps I'm not so good at listening at it. I honestly could not remember anything general advice, but one thing that really stuck with me when Tom was little was to always end things on your own terms. I think a lot of our parents struggle with their children's behavior. Tom used to be a tremendous one for throwing, for not focusing and so on. And I just remember this guy saying to me, always end things on your own terms. And that sort of stuck with me really as a good piece of advice around supporting behavior. But just general advice, I don't remember anyone giving me any. So maybe I wasn't listening, so apologies. I mean, certainly in our groups, I think one of the most important pieces is just to sort of enjoy things day by day for our very new parents, not to look too far into the future. And possibly that's the advice I'd like to have been given. Yeah, so that wasn't a good answer. Sorry.
No, do you know what, Nicola? I was actually going to spring another question on you that I hadn't warned you about, which was what would you say to someone who's just got a diagnosis of Down syndrome for their child? And you've already answered that. And it's brilliant, well, it's brilliant advice.
I mean, you know, we all, every new parent, I think, of a little one with Down syndrome does it, thinks about the future. Mm-hmm. And honestly, don't waste your time, because thinking and worrying isn't going to help in the slightest. You know, enjoy those newborn weeks, because they pass so flipping quickly.
I always say that diagnosis for me was a gorgeous lesson in learning to be present and just enjoy what was happening in front of me. And I mean, obviously it's not possible to do that all the time, but as much as you can. I think it's such good advice, that. And my final question, Nicola, is what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you got Tom's diagnosis and you were kind of in that pit of despair thinking that everything was awful?
I wish I'd known then just how much fun our lives would be. Honestly, I mean, Tom's 21 now, lives a mile up the road from me, and we have a blast. And I just wish I'd known that I'd taken a deep breath and relaxed and not been so smothered with all the fear and worry, and instead, you know, could see myself now as a very, very proud mum to an amazing young man. Well, both my children I'm immensely proud of, but really just how much fun life would be, and that it isn't, you know, it's never the end of a world. It's just a bit of a cliche, but the beginning of a slightly different one, I guess. Joy, fun. We laugh so much. Just how much love and enjoyment he brings to our lives.
Do you know what, Nicola? I think that, well, I can speak for myself and probably a lot of other mums who've just heard you say that. You saying that as a mum of a young adult rather than a child, I think is going to be incredibly helpful for people, because we were just talking about, you know, not looking too far into the future because, oh my God, what will that look like? And I know that everybody's journey is different, looks different and feels different. But you've just talked about your son who's 21, who lives down the road from you, and what a great time you have with him. And I think what a brilliant place to end this episode on such a positive note that I think will make people feel really good.
I hope so. Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you again for your honesty, Nicola. I think, as I always say on this podcast, it makes everybody feel less alone to hear somebody, you know, voice the negative things sometimes. It's great to be positive. You know, your organization is called Positive About Down Syndrome, and we absolutely should be. But the flip side of that is it's so important to be honest about the hard times and the negative feelings that you have. And that's what bonds us all together. So once again, thank you so much for your honesty. I really appreciate it, Nicola. Thank you.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you, Gemma.
Oh, I'm delighted I finally got Nicola on the podcast, in perfect timing with it being Well Down Syndrome Day this Saturday. So you can find out all of the information that Nicola was talking about and a whole load more at downsyndromeuk.co.uk. So you can donate on that website. You can apply for those packs that I was talking about that I got when Leo was born. You can read all of that information online. You can join the mailing list. There's the ideas that Nicola was talking about to celebrate World Down Syndrome Day, including that sunflower challenge, which I just absolutely love. And what an amazing thing she's done. And I just think it's so interesting. And I've had women on this podcast talking about the same thing, where they've set something up because of their child's diagnosis, and it's led their life in a completely different direction than they ever would have thought before they had their child. And I just think it's incredible. So thank you once again to Nicola, and thank you for listening. If you have a child with Down syndrome, if you choose to engage with World Down Syndrome Day, then I hope you have a great time. If you've arranged an event or a fundraiser, we are climbing a mountain. I don't know if it counts as a mountain. It's certainly a big hill with a big group of people on Saturday, which I can't wait for. And if you choose not to engage, or if it's triggering for you that day, or seeing everything on social media, maybe you're very early on in your journey, then I hope you're doing okay. So that's it for another episode. Thank you once again for listening, and I'll be back next week.